This is Hurricane Season, a podcast that explores some of the biggest storms that have greatly impacted Greater Houston people and policies. On Episode 7, we examine Hurricane Ike.
In September of 1900, the deadliest hurricane in American history struck Galveston. Monstrous waves swept out of the Gulf of Mexico and demolished the city. More than 8,000 people were killed, most of them drowned by the storm surge. In response, the city embarked on two massive engineering projects. It raised the elevation of the island by several feet, and it built the Galveston seawall to guard the island's Gulf coast against the wrath of future storms. The seawall proved its worth repeatedly in the decades that followed. It saved Galveston from destruction in 1915 when a hurricane even stronger than that of 1900 struck. It did so again when Hurricane Carla hit in 1961. But no defense is perfect. The seawall could not protect homes built beyond its reach, either on Galveston Island or the nearby Bolivar Peninsula. It could not guard against giant waves that flanked the island and struck its unprotected western shore. In either case, the only real protection for residents in the path of such a storm was to flee, before it was too late.
Everything you heard about this storm was, okay, it's a Category 2. As opposed to people evacuating, you had people going to Galveston Island to say, oh, we're going to have a hurricane party, we're going to ride out the storm in this beach house, and, well, this Category 2 storm produced a 17-foot storm surge because of its size.
I'm Andrew Schneider. Hurricane Ike struck in September 2008. Its storm surge hit Galveston Island like the vengeful ghost of the 1900 hurricane, wrecking communities all along Galveston Bay. Its winds triggered one of the worst blackouts in Texas history. On this episode of Hurricane Season, we explore how Ike forced the U.S. government to rethink the way it warns against tropical cyclones, and how it taught Greater Houston, once again, that there is no such thing as a minor hurricane.
Hurricane Season is a project of the Houston Flood Museum in partnership with Houston Public Media and is supported by Houston Endowment. Visit HoustonFloodMuseum.org.
My name is Dan Riley. I'm with the National Weather Service. I'm the warning coordination meteorologist for the Weather Service office in Houston.
Dan Riley arrived in Houston in July 2008. Before that, he spent 15 years stationed in weather offices on the East Coast. His new responsibilities included briefing local leaders and the public about major weather events.
I had been at the office for about 6 weeks, and we had just bought a home, actually. We were set to move into that home as the storm was working its way from east to west across the Atlantic.
Wednesday, September 3rd, 2008. The storm that became Ike formed off the northwest coast of Africa. It had to cross more than 2,000 miles of open ocean just to reach the eastern Caribbean. That provided a lot of warning time, but it didn't make it any easier to forecast where the storm would make landfall.
Initially, it looked like it may turn up the east coast, you know, when we're looking, you know, a good week and a half out. But at some point, it became clear that it would actually jog a little bit southwest and enter the Gulf of Mexico and be a threat to Texas.
Ike crossed Cuba as a Category 4 hurricane on September 8th. It was on track to reach the Texas coast within 120 hours. That's when FEMA requires emergency managers to go into action. Riley began briefing local leaders via webinar. That included Harris County Judge Ed Emmett.
You start deciding about evacuations, you start calculating storm surge, you start pre-positioning fuel supplies, all of those different aspects of preparing for the storm, and then you hope it doesn't hit, but if it does, you're ready.
Emmett had taken office 18 months earlier. He had spent decades working on transportation and logistics issues, both in and out of government. On top of that, Emmett says both his predecessor, Robert Eccles, and then-Houston Mayor Bill White wanted to make sure the mistakes made during Hurricane Rita 3 years earlier wouldn't be repeated.
From the day I took office, it was just pounded into me. One of your jobs is to evacuate the people who need to evacuate, but to get everybody else to stay. And of course, that's where that phrase hunker down came from.
Hunker down became Emmett's mantra during Ike.
Even though I'm Harris County judge, I have to coordinate with the Brazoria County and Galveston County judges and the officials there, because we need to let the area south of us clear before we put our people on the road.
Meanwhile, Ike's wind speed had slowed to 110 miles per hour. That made it a strong Category 2, just short of what the National Hurricane Center defines as a major hurricane. Again, Dan Riley of the National Weather Service.
One thing we observed along the coast is a lot of people were saying it's only a Category 2 and we don't leave for a Category 2. But what we knew at the Weather Service is we were looking at 10 to 15 feet of storm surge flooding, and it's very difficult to survive that.
Gulf Coast residents were too focused on the storm's wind speeds and less so on much more concerning factors. Ike had now grown to more than 400 miles in diameter. Its central air pressure had dropped to a level consistent with a much stronger storm. And Ike seemed determined to frustrate anyone trying to predict where it would make landfall. Sharon Knowles was then Houston's emergency management coordinator. She spoke with the University of Houston for their Houston History Project in July 2009.
This was here, then it was Matagorda Bay, then it was Corpus Christi, then it was south of Corpus, and then it comes back this direction.
Knowles said Ike's erratic behavior complicated efforts to get emergency resources, such as ambulances, where they were needed. On the evening of September 12th, with Ike just hours away from the Texas coast, Houston Mayor Bill White spoke with President George W. Bush, who asked the mayor what he needed most. White says his biggest concern was widespread power failures.
We needed for FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security to make available to the region every backup power generation that they could find in inventory and where they had contracted with various vendors.
White also asked Bush to help him convince utilities throughout the country to send linemen and tree-cutting teams to help CenterPoint repair downed power lines after the storm. As Houston officials were bracing for the worst, Galveston was already beginning its battle with Ike.
From the edge of tropical storm force winds across the diameter was almost 500 miles. That pushes a huge wall of water in front of it.
Terry Moore was Sharon Knowles' deputy. He too gave an interview to the Houston History Project in 2009.
So you saw people, there's great pictures of the wind, the waves coming up on the seawall and the streets being flooded. Well, why are there pictures of that? We should not have the cool pictures we've got of Galveston Island. Those people should have been gone.
Roughly a third of the population of Galveston Island and the Bolivar Peninsula refused to leave, even when ordered to evacuate. The memories of Hurricane Rita and the disaster of a mass evacuation were still fresh in people's minds. Many residents remembered getting stuck on the highway in the brutal summer heat of 2005. Neil Frank had just retired after nearly half a century as a meteorologist, first for the National Hurricane Center, then for Houston's CBS affiliate KHOU.
A lot of people didn't evacuate Galveston Island when Ike was approaching because, again, it's only a Category 2, and we have a seawall down there that is 17 feet high, so we're protected.
The storm was on a course to plow straight up the Houston Ship Channel. It veered north-northwest almost at the last moment. Then, just after 2 in the morning on Saturday, September 13th, Ike made landfall along the north end of Galveston Island. 2 miles away, across the strip of water known as the Bolivar Roads, the low-lying Bolivar Peninsula stood defenseless.
Bolivar, being a low-lying barrier island with no seawall, was pretty much wiped clean. Many homes wiped down to the slab.
Meteorologist Dan Riley says the storm surge topped the Galveston seawall. Worse, it crossed the Bolivar Roads into Galveston Bay.
Galveston Bay almost acted like a bathtub. The water from Ike with the northeast winds was pushed up on the western shore of Galveston Bay, As the storm lifted north and the winds shifted from west to east, the water sloshed essentially back to the eastern side of the bay.
The result was devastation, not only to Galveston, which was inundated from the west, but to low-lying communities all along both Galveston Bay and Trinity Bay to the north. A 17.5-foot storm surge washed 10 miles inland across Chambers County. The sheer size of Ike also sent storm surges across Jefferson and Orange counties, as well as southwestern Louisiana. Ike's next target was Houston. The city's theater district flooded, just as it had during Tropical Storm Allison. The more serious threat, though, was the wind. The storm ripped chunks off the retractable roof of Reliant Stadium. The wind blew out hundreds of windows of the J.P. Morgan Chase Tower downtown. That was in spite of precautions Houston took after Hurricane Alicia 25 years before. And over that time, another problem grew unnoticed. Future Houston Mayor Anise Parker was then Houston City Controller.
In that interim, we had allowed tree limbs and massive growth around power lines. We have above ground power lines.
The wind toppled trees into power lines, knocking out electricity. Other parts of the system tried to compensate, only to get knocked out in turn.
And so what we had was cascading transformer failures. This one would blow, the next one would blow, the next one would blow, and it would travel down the line.
The U.S. Department of Energy estimates 2.6 million customers in Texas and Louisiana lost power. Many didn't get it back for weeks. Sharon Knoll told this to the Houston History Project.
That was the largest power outage, not only in Houston, but in the state of Texas, historically.
Anise Parker says if it weren't for the backup generators Mayor White had arranged, the city would have lost its water and sewage systems as well, creating a potential health crisis.
Because we're so flat, both water and sewer is entirely electric powered. There's no gravity feed. We came really within a matter of a couple of hours of losing our water system because we didn't ever model a complete grid failure.
Ike slowed as it drifted further inland. But even after it dropped below tropical storm strength, it wreaked havoc across Arkansas and the Midwest. In the end, Ike claimed roughly 200 lives. State and CDC statistics put Texas' death toll at more than 120. Causes of death ranged from drowning to carbon monoxide poisoning from using portable generators improperly. The storm also inflicted nearly $28 billion worth of damage. Anise Parker says Ike led city officials to work more closely with Houston Lighting and Power, now a part of NRG, in hardening the grid against cascading power failures.
And we are also being much more vigilant in making sure that vegetation stays away from our above-ground power system.
Dan Riley says that after Ike, the National Hurricane Center revisited how it labels hurricanes. Too many people had lost their lives because they thought the storm was, quote, just a Category 2 on the Saffir-Simpson scale.
The scale was renamed to Saffir-Simpson Hurricane Wind Scale to make it explicitly clear that it's only referring to the wind hazard, not the surge, not the overall storm severity.
One question that has haunted many Texas residents for the past decade is, what would have happened if Ike hadn't made that last-minute turn to the north?
Our ship channel escaped Hurricane Ike.
Jim Blackburn is co-director of Rice University's Severe Storm Prediction Center. It's modeled the effects of a hurricane that followed Ike's original course. Blackburn says the storm surge would have gone straight up the Houston ship channel and crippled the port of Houston. He says Ike would have wrecked the region's chemical plants and refineries, causing an environmental catastrophe. And instead of killing hundreds, Ike might have killed thousands.
If Ike had been 30 miles further south, it would have been one of the most devastating storms in United States history. So it makes a huge difference where these storms come ashore.
The threat of such a disaster became the genesis of the proposed coastal barrier known variously as the Ike Dike and the Coastal Spine. Advocates argue that it's essential to prevent the worst-case scenario Blackburn envisions. The project has faced stiff resistance, both over its potential price and over concerns of environmental damage to Galveston Bay. But on one thing, both sides agree. No coastal barrier would have protected the region from Harvey.
Hurricane Season is produced by Andrew Schneider, Davis Land, Todd Holslander, and me, Maggie Martin. You can listen to this episode by going to houstonpublicmedia.org/Harvey. On the next and final episode of Hurricane Season, we revisit Harvey and examine how the lessons it taught are helping the region plan for future storms.